This is the fifth in a series on a kaleidoscope in your hymn book. Today we're going to be talking about American folk tunes, and especially ones that are from collections in the 1800s. All week we've been talking about styles of hymns and in relation to historic styles. We're talking about plain song hymns in the medieval period, the psalter tunes and the early chorales in the Renaissance and early Baroque period. And in terms of style periods, the next style, of course, is the Romantic period. Well, we skipped the classic in there. The Romantic period in the 1800s. But American folk tunes don't fit into that designation at all. Okay, so we can't really describe these tunes as romantic in the sense of like Brahms or Victorian hymns or that sort of sense at all. And in fact, this has been one of the problems. In hymn books previous to this century, the folk tunes appeared in their rather natural state and were free to speak in their the way they had as folk music. But in the early 20th century, as hymnals were being published, folk tunes were entirely removed because they did not fit the image of a Victorian, a romantic type of hymn. And instead, and maybe it was good, but in a sense, instead of trying to make them fit the mold, they just removed them all together. Excuse me. So now, in our hymn book, in the LBW, and in nearly all of the American hymn books that have been published in the last 15 or 20 years, we see a tremendous amount now of folk hymns being restored to the hymn books. And in the hymn books that were published maybe 20 years ago, we found these folk tunes being tried to fit into the mold of the Victorian hymn. Victorian hymn, that's kind of a loose thing. Remember the other night when we sang, "The day that thou gavest, Lord, now has ended"? Okay, that's the prototype maybe of the Victorian hymn, the really pretty four-part harmonies. Okay, that's not a derogatory term, it's simply a point of reference. So in the hymn books maybe that were published about 20 years ago, like the service book and hymnal, the folk tunes that were incorporated at that time were fit into this mold. But in our LBW, and I'm sure in the new Episcopal hymnal that's momentarily going to be out, and in other hymn books that have come out in the last few years, we find folk tunes close to restored to their original position. Oh, I got a frog this morning here. Okay, let's look at at hymn 331. You're right. have to work. We'll have to work doubly hard to counteract. Okay. I probably ask too often, but how many of you know this tune? Sort of as a point of reference. Okay. Well, let's just sing it through a couple of times to kind of get the feeling of the tune. About like Jerusalem, my happy home. Get ready, sing. Jerusalem, my happy home, when shall I go to thee? When shall my sorrows have an end? What joys, when shall I see? Okay, pretty good. Let's imagine that this is like a dance, okay? So it kind of perk up a little bit and let it swing a bit, okay? Ready, sing. Jerusalem, my happy home, when shall I come to thee? When shall my sorrows have an end? And joys, when shall I see? It's too pretty. Okay, it sounds like the day that thou gavest, Lord, has ended. Okay? It's pretty that way. Let's be a little more rollicking about it. A little lighter, okay, and not so smooth. Ready, sing.
Jerusalem, my happy home, when shall I come to thee? When shall my sorrows have an end? What joys, when shall I see?
Okay, we're getting better. Getting better, can go, still go a little lighter. When we start singing, Jerusalem, my happy home, Then we're too smooth, okay? We're too pretty. We want to beat it more rhythmic. Jerusalem, my happy home. Just sort of let it bounce along. Not too much sound, just light. Ready? Once more, sing.
Jerusalem, my happy home. When shall I come to thee? When shall my sorrows have an end? The joys, when shall I see?
Joys, when shall I see? Joy is one of my favorite words in English. Okay, you have to kind of go around it. Can you sing just that little last line? Sing thy joys.
My joys, when shall I see?
Wonder.
Thy joys, when shall I see?
Okay. Jerusalem, my happy home, of course, is not talking about the city, is it? No, it's talking about the heavenly Jerusalem, yeah. Okay, now, what is somewhat minimized in this hymn book, but I remember in the service book and hymnal, was especially problematical with this tune. When they accompany it, would be like, we have lots of chords and it kind of loads the thing down. Okay, but listen, we could probably do it with, if you wanted to, you could probably even stay on the same chord all the way through. Anything we've done this week remind you of that? Or does this remind you of anything that we've done earlier this week, those that you've been here? Exactly. What instrument did he use?
I have a dither
in that song.
Didn't you
know? It's called a dulcimer. Okay, that was on Tuesday night. Were all of you here on Tuesday night? Okay. We did an American folk tune on Tuesday night, or that is, and Tim Kieschner, who's a multifaceted musician here in the community, had God Who Stretched the Spangled Heavens. And he accompanied on a dulcimer. Dulcimer is a stringed instrument, has a long neck on it, rather like a guitar, and strings, and has frets on it so that you know where to put your fingers. But instead of a big box, sound box, down on one end like a guitar, it sort of has two little spots along the neck. So the neck is the full length of the thing, and then there's these two little sound boxes in the middle. Okay, on the dulcimer, what is one feature of those strings that remind you maybe of folk music of another land, and that I just did here. A drone, yeah. There are a couple of the strings, and I think, depending on how, I think dulcimers come in different sizes and different tunings and things, but you could have usually maybe two strings that you don't use your fingers on, and those strings just keep sounding just as I just played there. And this is what you heard when Tim played. So, the chords don't change very much, do they? It stays rather constant. And so any harmonization of folk tunes, American folk tunes, that changes harmony on every single note, it just isn't like it was, okay? And we can do a lot of things with folk tunes if we get rid of those chords. Okay, and one of the things we can do if we don't have a dulcimer at hand is we can sing like dulcimers. And that's what I'd like to try now. Okay, so in this case, let's have, we can set up a little rhythm, and maybe in this case we can use the word Jerusalem, because that has kind of a nice swing about it, and we can just sing, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, Jerusalem. Okay. Why don't you men sing Jerusalem, and ladies will sing the tune, and just stay on the same note through the whole tune. Okay. And just real quietly, just sort of a little strumming underneath. And we're gonna start down here. Ready? Sing.
Jerusalem, my happy home. When shall I go to thee? When shall my sorrows have an end? Thy joys, when shall I see?
is there anybody in your parishes that couldn't sing? And they can do it right off, can't they? And immediately, No, don't answer that question.
Yeah, we brought them along.
Okay.
When would you do this?
I'd practice it before the service.
I mean, on Sunday, what would the organist be doing?
I am the organist. Yeah, I would be standing out in front of the people.
We don't have organists like you, mostly.
Then this is even better fortune, isn't it? Because, I mean, unless they are unwilling. But I find especially... Well, maybe they've just never been aware of it. But I find opportunities, particularly in folk tunes, where the organists are not highly skilled, and it really lets them off the hook, you know, because you don't have to play, and you can still recreate this in wonderful sounds.
But a school
choir. Children's choir? Sure. Or if you have if you've never done this tune before and say you want to kind of set the tone, have the adult choir sing the first verse and then let the organ play thereafter. Even just catching the image of the sound will change the whole feeling of the hymn. But usually it's not the organist that's the hardest person, usually the pastor's the hardest person. I'm sure, anyway, musicians can stand in the way as well as lead the way. And we often do, yeah.
I just wanted to share that. I was just reading my church bulletin that came in last night. And this was their hymn of the month, and it said that the original had 33 verses.
Oh! You could try out everything. They didn't need a sermon. Okay, well, let's embellish on this a little bit. Instead of singing the same chord all the way through, let's change, and when we get to the end of the first line, we're going to go like this. Jerusalem, 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 Jerusalem. So in other words, we're going to go down at the end of what would be the end of the first line, and then on the next to the last measure, and then go back up, okay? Why don't we all sing that little... ready, go.
Jerusalem, 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 Jerusalem.
And the high voices can do that too, you know, while the low voices are singing the tune. There's nothing that says that the men have to do the extra parts. And just trade them around. We can also trade, and you could have your tenors amongst your men or amongst your congregation sing Jerusalem, and the basses sing down here, and we could do both of them. We will try that in a minute, but let's just try what we just did now. And men, why don't you again do the ostinato thing, and ladies will do the first verse. Okay, so you're going to go down on the last note of the first line and on the next to the last measure of the second line, and you're down there. And we're going to start down here, sing.
Jerusalem, Jerusalem, when shall I come to thee? When shall my sorrows have been, thy joys, when shall I see?
Okay. Let's try it with the ladies doing the ostinato and the men doing the tune. Why don't we go on to the second verse? Okay, so... we're going to be up there. They're going to start down there. Go.
Oh, as the altar of the saints, oh, sweet and pleasant song, in these no sorrow may seek mount, or priest or cant or toll.
Okay, so you can do one verse one way and another verse the other way. Okay, what other ways of singing do people who sing folk tunes engage in? One side and then the other side.
men, women, I suppose.
Men, women. You could have the kids sing a verse or whatever. In much folk music is a scale called a pentatonic scale. A pentatonic scale is, well, in very basic terms, is a scale that has five tones. Okay, and you can easily create a pentatonic scale on a piano by just playing the five flat keys. Okay, now the lucky thing about a pentatonic scale is there are no clashy sounds. Because if you play those two notes together, it's okay. And this is okay, and that's okay, and that's okay. So there are no bad sounds together, which means that any tune in a pentatonic scale could be sung in a round. Okay? Now, tunes that are not in pentatonic scale have to be composed carefully so that it works out, but any tune in a pentatonic scale can be sung in a round. And lots of folk songs either are entirely pentatonic or mostly pentatonic, and will work that way. Okay, you can get a sense of that here in this tune, and you can check it out, because if you can play the tune on the black keys. Okay, here it falls apart. I had to go down on the whites, one note. And here it is again. So there's one little, it slips out for one little note. But this tune, in fact, does work in a round. Let's go back down to our other key. Okay, this time let's have, men, why don't you lead off, and ladies, we'll come in at the end of their first measure, okay? Why don't we go back up to the first verse so we don't have to diddle with words, okay? Ready, sing.
Jerusalem, my heavenly home, when shall I come to thee? When shall my sorrows cease? My joys, when shall I see?
Okay, easy, isn't it? Okay, now let's do something different. Man, I want you to go back and sing your drone part. But stay all on the same note, okay? And then, can you two start off the round? And we three will sort of join in, okay? We'll make a real racket here. Okay, let's just sort of start the ostinato.
Jerusalem, 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 Jerusalem,
isn't that fun? Isn't that fun? It's also instant choir music. Mm-hmm. Instant choir anthems, and it doesn't cost you a cent. Isn't this book a resource for your choirs in small parishes that don't have budgets to buy music? It really is.
But it's way too expensive to have these hymns then, because
right. That's right. And I think it's kind of neat with a congregation, at least I've found in teaching new tunes, and particularly tunes that you got a bit of a challenge about, is that people then say, aha, this is a challenge. This is something worth sitting up for. It isn't this thing that's been laid on us, you know, this heavy, awful thing.
Or
did you wipe it out? Not to listen to that one. Okay, let's look at another tune, though, and see how this plays out in other tunes.
Mm-hmm. Question or comment. Generally, though, these American folk tunes are not going to work very well on an organ, are they?
You're right. You're right. Alas, the organist gets put in second spot. You're right. That's right. And, sometimes I play them on the organ.
Well,
and I kind of thin it out, yeah. But I think the thing that's so neat is once you've done it this way, in a sense, no matter how you do it any other time, you still carry the sound in your ear. And how the words then begin to speak. Also, before we go on, I'd like to say, I see a real link, in a sense, between this tune and this style of tune with those French Psalter tunes. The comfort, comfort ye my people. There's a sort of dancey feeling about it, isn't it? Also, a fairly basic harmony. Not lots of harmony goes on there. So the tune sort of dances along in a fairly basic skeleton sort of harmony that holds it up. Okay, and the other thing is about breathing. Back at the beginning when we were talking about plain song hymns, we said the breathing kind of happened all of us together when it felt right. But when we got to Psalter tunes and dance tunes, you had to breathe where the rhythm said breathe, and you had to move quick or it would destroy the whole tune. And in this particular kind of folk tune, these tunes that are dancing, the breathing is very important when you breathe and how quick it takes, how much time it takes to keep it going. You can't sing around if you're being sloppy about breathing. Okay, so this then is sort of a very rhythmic folk tune. We also have folk tunes that are really more akin to plain songs. And I'd like to look at maybe 307. But I have to say, when I really sit down and look at these, sometimes I can't decide whether they're rhythmic or melodic in nature. I think they kind of go both ways. This was a tune that was brand new to me, as most of them are, of course. And I noodled around with it a long time, trying to decide how fast it should go. And I really couldn't decide myself, so I finally put it on my choir. I said, okay, we're going to sing this tune about three different speeds. See how fast you think it feels. Where does it feel right? And at least for now, what I sort of came up with is something about this speed. And we'll try it out on you and see what you think, too. Forgive our sins as we forgive you. Taught us, Lord, to pray. But you alone can grant us grace to live the words we say. Have you sung this tune? Are you familiar with it? Have you done it at a very different tempo than that? Finally, what I came down to is you can't sing it, at least it seems to me. Forgive our sins as we forgive. You taught us, Lord, to pray. And especially on the second verse, how can your pardon reach and bless the you know, you can't breathe there, it seems to me, even though the tune sort of could breathe there. The text really has to go on to the all the way halfway through, so you have to sing, how can your pardon reach and bless the unforgiving heart? And so for me, that kind of became the deciding factor on it. Okay, now that brings up a problem, because we've got these eighth notes in here, and when you start moving on them, they go kind of quick. Forgive our sins as we forgive. You've got 100 people singing in your parish, and immediately it goes boom, and it kind of sags down. What do you have to do when you're singing quickly like that? You got to keep it really light. And you can't sing too loud. And you got to sit up, don't you? You just can't just go to sleep on it. Let's try it. Okay, so sit real tall, sing very lightly, and kind of aim all the way to the word pray. Notice the tune essentially starts low and noodles around a little bit, and then it goes up, and then it sort of comes down and noodles a little bit, and then it settles back down. I think this tune has a really lovely curve about it. And it goes all the way up to the middle and then settles all the way back down. Okay? Ready, sing.
Lord, give our sins as we forgive you. Taught us, Lord, to pray. But you alone can grant us grace to live the words we say.
Now let's go into the next verse. I love this hymn because I remember one time, in fact, I was looking for a tune about forgiveness, and most of the hymns I found when I go paging through the book were all about God's forgiveness of us, and what I was looking for was the one about us forgiving each other, and then I found this one, and I don't think there are very many hymns that deal with person-to-person forgiveness. We talk lots and lots about our relationship with God, but not so much the horizontal one. And I think this is just a wonderful hymn. They really do, don't they? But they, of course, didn't originally. That's wonderful. I'm really glad. I'm glad you're here today to say that.
I think that's in that, you know, that book about the LBW?
Oh, the hymn?
Yeah.
I'll have to check it.
I'm disappointed that it doesn't have more stories like that, but that one
would be. That's neat. That may be the neatest thing that happens today. Good. Do you hear in this tune, even on a quicker level, it's rather chanty-like, isn't it? It isn't dancing. also notice if it were a romantic tune, a Victorian hymn tune, it probably would go. Or at least at the end. And it would end, be harmonized sort of like. But in folk music, we have a sort of modal flavor that we see in the early Psalter tunes, in the early chorale tunes. And all of that just didn't settle well with the people who were writing hymn books in 1920. So they said, oh, this is really crude. This is just such basic stuff. You know, we've got these really nice hymns here. We can't have this stuff in our hymn book now. So away it went for a generation. Okay. Let's look at 385. This is one you probably all know. I think this hymn is a good example of what happens to these tunes if you play exactly the harmony that you see written. Okay, what I mostly think of this tune with its harmony, this is sort of how I think of it. Is that your image of the tune, or do you have a different image? Or do you have any image? Okay, well, that's sort of the image that I came with the tune. When I hear it with the chords, it's kind of sort of minor and feeling a little bit heavy, you know? But very beautiful, really a very beautiful, kind of sad tune. But when you look at the words, it doesn't really compute, does it? Okay, about 2 years ago, Tom Smith, who was the president, the executive director of the Hymn Society in America, did a seminar on hymns with our Organ Guild chapter in Elmira, New York. And he talked about his grandfather. He grew up in South Carolina or someplace down in the hills there. And his grandfather was a mountain person. And he said he remembers his grandfather singing this tune. And he said it was nothing like you hear it now. And he said it was, you know, much more rollicking, much more rhythmic, and also a very nasal sort of sound. And it's something that we just had never thought of in terms of this tune. But in terms of the text, it says everything. So let's kind of forget about what's written here, except the tune, and let's sing a little bit. Ready, sing.
What wondrous love is this, oh my soul. What wondrous love is this, O my soul? What wondrous love is this that caused the Lord of bliss to bear the dreadful curse for my soul, to bear the dreadful curse for my soul?
We also can get into this, the dreadful curse thing too, isn't it? Not very pretty.
Okay, let us sing. Kent, would you sing a solo for us?
Yep.
Okay, and maybe if you two guys would just kind of take a down there, and ladies, we're gonna take kind of a low one. We're gonna be down here. We're just gonna sort of sing this along, and Kent's gonna sing the second verse. First verse then is, well, this is really a very personal hymn in a sense, because it's talking about I and me. But I think, especially in the second verse when it says, when I was sinking down, that's sort of the reality of this tune in the beginning. Okay, and maybe then using a solo singer maybe might be a way of illuminating the words. And then everybody joining in on another verse, maybe this isn't the best place to do that, but look for verses where maybe one of the verses or most of the verses are sort of general in nature, and then all of a sudden there's this personal verse. And maybe have one person sing that. And then everybody join in again.
Well, that's, you know, that's what we're expected to do, right? No, that's what we're expected to do. I don't know, it's just the way it's always been. It's the way it was when we went to church, right? I don't know, it's the tradition.
But if you're, the hymns that you were trained on were not focused.
That's true.
Well, it goes with other hymns.
Sure.
But, okay, I think it goes even more basic than that. What are musicians trained to do, first and foremost?
Make the prelude.
No, I mean, not even in regard to church music, but as musician, what do you spend your entire life learning to do?
Learning the notes.
Learning to read what you see on the page. And to you know, you see this is a C and this is a B and there's an F, and if you get a C and a B and an F down, well, if it doesn't happen to be the easiest singing range, you're out of luck, right?
Oh, don't read the words.
Yeah. Okay. So musicians, I mean, we're taught from earliest childhood to read the notes, to read the rhythm, and if you don't recreate what you see, it's wrong. And in most music making, that's right. Okay? I mean, it's a fact of life. If you're going to play in an orchestra, we all got to be playing the same by the same rules, or it's not going to work out. If we're doing Bach chorales and we don't do it as it's written, we're going to get in trouble. But that's not the rules by which folk tunes were created and go. And it's really hard to let go of that. And one of the really beautiful messages that Alice Parker has had in this book about creative hymn singing is that much music making in the church, we get hung up by the printed page, how it looks on the page. And for plain song singing, and for Psalter hymns, and for much of the church's history, singing without accompaniment was the norm. Only in our own century, or to the middle part of the last century into our own century, was accompaniment by the organ obligatory. For the whole rest of the church's history, singing without accompaniment was the norm. If you're singing without the organ, you're free to breathe, unless the rhythm of the tune forces you to breathe in a certain way. You can sing it in any range you want, can't you? You know, if we see here it says C, I've got to play C. But if we don't have any C at hand, we just take our voices and we sing it where it feels good. Right?
In the beginning, they just jump an octave. Whenever it gets too high, they just jump.
Yeah. So in this last 100 years, we've become so bound by the page, the printed page, that's what and escaping the printed page is a problem. Okay, this tune, let's try it here. This is probably wouldn't make your top 10 for Christmas Eve, but I think it's a really beautiful tune, and it's a very real to life text. Okay, it's kind of where we really live. I just see we don't want to be where we really live, do we? We want to be in the happy place. Okay, maybe let's start about. If we come to a note that we especially like, do we have to hold it exactly according to the count? No, we really don't. I think this is one of those tunes that's a little more like chanting. So supposing when we get to yet hear a new life, and we want to just kind of hold on to life just a little bit, I think we could do that. Why don't we see how that works? Take the same verse again, same.
No future for the world.
just how long we were going to stay on life, wouldn't we? And we wouldn't have to even talk about it, because we'd just know. See, I think this tune actually, in its accompaniment, sort of captures this, the sense of the bareness, right in the beginning. And the choir is griping because it's not in four parts and we can't sing soprano, alto, tenor, and bass, right?
Right.
You can't win at all. But I think, in all defense, I think the LBW and these new hymn books have come such a far ways down the road toward making these tunes go back to their original feeling. So if you have an organist that wants to play all the notes, you can play all the notes and you still get relatively close. But let's try our and why don't Kent maybe take the C and you two guys take us and sort of hum there in the background. And ladies, we'll sing How Cold the Stars Are in Bethlehem, the second verse. Ready? And see how cold it feels with this accompaniment. Go. The last verse all together. We're just talking about American folk tunes. We aren't even talking about the Norwegian folk tunes. There's a Danish folk tune that's an epiphany hymn. It's just a delight. And there are, folk tunes of all the world in this book, and we're only just talking about this one little batch of them. Okay, so it's a treasure chest here. Okay, let's look at 290 first. Once I did this, just playing it on the organ, and it was a disaster. Everybody got so mixed up of where the tune goes. But when I was singing it this morning, I was so like, this isn't a hard tune. But it's just when I played at the organ and nobody could tell where we were going on it, that it was so difficult. Okay, let's try it. Ready? Sing.
There's a whiteness in God's mercy, like the whiteness of the sea. There's a kindness in there is no place where
Okay, now keep your finger on that page and look at 240.
Lord,
let's sing it again so we get it really good, because then we're going to sing both at the same time. Yeah? Okay?
Lord, with glowing heart I praise thee for the bliss that love bestows, for the pardoning grace that saves me, and the peace that from it flows. Help, O God, my weak endeavor, this whole soul to rapture raise. Thou must light the flame, Lord, never, and my love be born to praise.
Really, we shouldn't read it.
Probably want to get the words all going. Or if you knew the tunes really well, which we don't, but when you know the tune really well, then you can look at the words of one and sing both tunes. You know, but you have to, you really have to know the tune well
to
do that.
You could just sing one on Lou or something.
Or sing one on Lou, or let your choir do it, or something. But, it, you know, it has possibilities. Yeah, kids sing partner songs in school, don't they? Why shouldn't we sing partner songs in church? Yeah. I think that probably helps to point up the words, too. Yeah. And along that same line, look at 372. In fact, exactly along that line. And this is one of my favorite tunes. They're all my favorite, I have to confess. It depends on which one the one I'm doing right now is my favorite, I think. But text-wise, if you're going to sing a canon around in this hymn, what verse would you not do it on? So if our song is united, we probably don't want to be singing it in round with each other. So what then is the best verse for singing, maybe in canon, text-wise? Yeah, yeah. The in fact, when Bach wrote fugues, which are very complex canons, of a sort, the word fugue comes from a root word, fuga, it means flight. So, while often when I'm doing folk tunes with my parish, I'm most inclined to do the round on the last verse. You sort of get the tune going really good, and when everybody really has the tune really well in mind, then throw in the hard stuff. And this tune, text-wise, I think you're working counter to the text. And I think that's one of the things I want to say, whatever you do with a tune, whether it's recreating the style, whether you're deciding who's going to sing what verses, or if you're going to have a solo, if you're going to have the choir sing, if you're going to have the high voices or the low voices or whatever, whatever you're going to do has to point up the text, because we're not in business to provide musical gimmicks for the parish, or musical mind flights for the musicians. We're in business to proclaim the word, just as sure as the sermon does. And so it's really important in thinking these through to look at the text and what does the text say. This is getting close to out of time. And I want to do just a moment on... Now this is one that is not in pentatonic scale, but it goes very nicely in a canon. The King shall come, ready, sing.
The King shall come when morning dawns and life triumphant breaks. When beauty gives the eastern hills and light to joy away.
We're getting a little bit smooth in our singing again. Okay, I have to keep coming back to our Victorian ears here. And life triumphant breaks, and life to joy awakes. Once again, sing.
The King shall come when morning dawns and life triumphant breaks. When beauty gilds the eastern hills and life to joy awakes.
Okay, now we're going to do it in a canon. Now, first, sing.
The King shall come.